All right, welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're diving into a case that really gets to the heart of what makes an invention patentable.
Yeah, that whole question of can you patent something old just because you found a new use for it? It's a big one. Especially for you law students out there, this stuff comes up all the time.
It does. And today's case, Henry Schreiber, is a perfect example. Think popcorn, patent law, and a bit of a head-scratcher of a decision.
Henry Schreiber is a classic case because it highlights the idea of anticipation. Basically, can an older invention, even if it was for something completely different, shoot down a patent for something seemingly new?
Right. So we've got Stephen Schreiber, our inventor in this case. He comes up with what he thinks is a pretty neat idea, a new device for dispensing popcorn. You know, like a little conical thing. You attach it to your popcorn bucket, give it a shake, and out pops a few kernels at a time.
Sounds pretty straightforward.
You'd think so, right?
Yeah.
But here's the kicker. The patent office rejects his application. And the reason.
Oh.
A patent from the 1940s for an oil can spout.
An oil can?
Yep. Apparently, the patent office saw some similarities between Schreiber's popcorn dispenser and this old oil can spout. Now, Schreiber argued that his invention was different, not in its basic shape, but in how it functioned.
Right. He's saying, sure, it might look kind of similar to an oil can spout, but mine's specifically designed to dispense popcorn, a few kernels at a time, just the right amount. You wouldn't use an oil can spout for that, right?
Exactly. He's focusing on the intended use and how the dispenser actually interacts with the popcorn itself. So our job today is to figure out why the Federal Circuit, that's the court that handles patent appeals, ended up siding with the patent office. Why did they think a popcorn dispenser was essentially just an oil can spout in disguise?
Well, to get into that, we need to look a bit closer at the inventions themselves.
Okay, let's do it.
So picture Schreiber's popcorn dispenser. It's conical, like you said. It has a wide opening at one end that you'd attach to your popcorn container. Then it narrows down to a smaller opening where the popcorn comes out.
Got it. Like a funnel, basically.
Exactly. And then there's this 1940s patent, the Hartz patent, for an oil can spout. Structurally, it's also conical. And the USPTO, the patent office, latched onto this. How could they argue that these two things were basically the same invention?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question.
Well, their argument boiled down to this concept of inherent functionality. Basically, they were saying that the conical shape of the Hartz spout, even though it was designed for oil, inherently had the capability to dispense small amounts of any material. It didn't matter that it was never intended for popcorn.
Okay, I'm starting to see where this is going. So we're getting into the legal weeds here. This is where the concept of anticipation comes into play. Under Section 102B of the patent law, if an invention is anticipated, it means it's not really new and therefore can't be patented.
Absolutely. Anticipation is a big deal in patent law, and it all hinges on whether every single element of your invention is already described in some earlier piece of prior art.
And in this case, that prior art is the Hartz patent. But here's the thing. The Hartz patent doesn't explicitly mention popcorn. So how can the patent office say it anticipates Schreiber's invention?
That's where inherency comes in. It means that a function or a characteristic is so fundamentally tied to the structure of an invention that it's basically unavoidable, even if the original inventor never thought about it that way.
So they're saying, even though the Hartz patent never mentions popcorn, if you attached it to a popcorn container and shook it, it would have to dispense popcorn just because of the way it's shaped.
Exactly. Now, Schreiber did try to fight back. He submitted a declaration saying that he'd tried using a spout like the one in the Hartz patent, and it just wasn't good at dispensing popcorn.
So he's saying, look, I've tested it, and it doesn't actually work the way my invention does.
Yeah.
Did that convince the patent office?
Not really. They said his argument was too vague. They wanted details, like what were the exact dimensions of the spout he tested? What kind of popcorn did he use? Was it small kernels? Large kernels? How exactly did he conduct the test?
He needed to provide concrete evidence, not just general statements. Important lesson there for any aspiring patent lawyers. Be specific.
Absolutely. And that lack of specific evidence came back to bite him when the case went to the Federal Circuit.
Okay, so tell me about the Federal Circuit's decision. What were their main reasons for upholding the patent office's rejection?
Well, they made three key points. First, they emphasized this idea of inherent disclosure. Remember, they said it doesn't matter if the prior art was intended for a different purpose. If its structure is capable of performing the function described in the new patent, that's enough to anticipate the claim.
So in Schreiber's case, it didn't matter that the Hartz spout was designed for oil. What mattered was that structurally, it could also dispense popcorn.
Right. The court really focused on that inherent capability. And their second point was about the burden of proof. They said, once the patent office showed that the heart spout could potentially work as a popcorn dispenser, it was up to Schreiber to prove that it couldn't. And as we've talked about, his vague declaration just didn't cut it.
He needed to show them, with hard evidence, that the heart spout wouldn't work as described in his patent.
Exactly. And the Federal Circuit's third point focused on the intended use doctrine. They basically said, you can't get a patent just by finding a new use for an existing product. So in their view, Schreiber's popcorn dispenser was really just a repurposed oil can spout.
Okay. So the takeaway there is that the novelty has to be in the product or process itself, not just in a new way of using it. Interesting. Now, there was one other element in Schreiber's patent. His claim, too, added a closing mechanism to the spout. Did that change things at all?
Not really. The court basically saw that as a really simple modification. Any engineer could have come up with that. It wasn't inventive enough to make the invention patentable.
Okay, so the majority opinion was pretty clear-cut. But this case actually had a dissenting opinion, right? Judge Newman disagreed with the majority. What was her take?
Yeah, Judge Newman argued that the majority had overlooked some really important details in Schreiber's patent claims. She pointed out that Schreiber wasn't just claiming any conical dispenser. He specifically called for a container of popcorn, and he described a mechanism where the kernels themselves would jam up the spout and only release a few at a time.
So she's focusing on the specific function of the dispenser and how it interacts with the popcorn kernels. And her point is, the Hartz patent doesn't say anything about popcorn or that jamming mechanism.
Exactly. She thought the majority had kind of stretched the interpretation of the Hartz patent to make it fit Schreiber's invention. And she was worried that this would weaken the whole idea of anticipation, which requires that every element of the invention be found in the prior art.
So, essentially, it was a debate over how broadly to interpret the prior art. The majority focused on the inherent structural capability of the oil can spout, while Judge Newman emphasized the specific functional limitations described in Schreiber's patent. That's a pretty fundamental difference in perspective.
It is, and it highlights some of the ongoing tensions in patent law.
All right, so for all those future patent lawyers out there, what are the key lessons from In re Schreiber? What should they take away from this case?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that you need to be super careful about using purely functional language in your patent claims. If the prior art can inherently perform that function, even if it was for something else entirely, your claim might be in trouble.
So instead of just describing what the invention does, focus on how it's structured.
Yeah.
Emphasize the unique physical features.
Right. Focus on structure first and function second. And another big lesson is that if you're ever arguing against an anticipation rejection, you need really solid evidence. Vague statements won't get you anywhere. You need to show, with specific data and testing, why the prior art simply can't do what your invention does.
Basically, back up your arguments with cold, hard facts. And the third big takeaway.
The third one is about the intended use doctrine. Don't fall into the trap of thinking you can patent an old product just because you found a cool new way to use it. The novelty has to be in the invention itself.
That's such a fundamental principle of patent law. And for anyone who's thinking about going into patent litigation, this case also shows how important it is to really understand the technology involved.
Absolutely. You need to be able to explain how the prior art works, how the new invention works, and why they're different. Often it comes down to very specific details.
So understanding In re Schreiber is all about understanding the nuances of novelty in patent law, especially when you're dealing with things like repurposed technology or new uses for old inventions.
Exactly. It forces us to think about the line between a truly new invention and just a clever application of something that already exists.
All right. So to sum it all up, the big lesson from In re Schreiber is that even if you've come up with a really innovative use for an old technology, the concept of inherency in prior art can be a real hurdle to patentability. When you're facing these kinds of challenges, clear structural claim limitations and detailed specific evidence are your best weapons.
And on that note, here's something to think about. How do you think this idea of inherency might play out in fields like biotech or AI, where things are changing so rapidly and old technologies are constantly being adapted for new purposes? What kind of evidence would you need to overcome an inherency challenge in those situations?
That's a great question to ponder. And with that, we'll wrap up this deep dive. We hope you've enjoyed exploring In re Schreiber with us. It's a case that really gets you thinking about the core principles of patent law.
It really does.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.